Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Sports to the max. Mike Max has the night off, and a lovely night it is. You know, there's just certain days in the spring, summer, and fall where you're just like, it doesn't get any better than this in these parts. And tonight is one of those. Just a beautiful evening. Last night I was doing a Legion game on cable TV up here in the northern suburbs. It was Andover at Anoka. And it looked like there's no way we're going to get this ball game in. There's no way. It was cloudy. It was humid. It just wanted to rain. And it never did. And they were keeping an eye on the radar. No lightning in the area, of course. And by the time we got later in the ball game, the clouds started to thin out. The humidity started to go out of the air. And it just turned out to be a great night at the ballpark, and there was enough breeze to keep the mosquitoes away. And, by the way, Andover got the better of Anoka in that rivalry. Whatever the sport, whether it's Legion Ball or VFW or high school sports, pretty good rivalry up there in Anoka County, and Andover prevails in that one last night. But turned out to be a pretty good night, and we've got a great night tonight here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Before the news, we talked about Rudy Gobert meeting the media today. And speaking of the media, Chris Hine joins us, covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune, and joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Chris, how you been?
I'm good, Steve. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Busy day today. Rudy Gobert in town. And I got to admit, love the accent. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I took French in high school, so looking forward to maybe dusting off some of the French I learned and getting that back into my head when I'm able to chat with Rudy more one-on-one in the future, for sure.
Yeah, and certainly a huge deal, making headlines all over the NBA, a gigantic move. We all know what the Timberwolves gave up, including draft picks in the future. It is all about winning now. Clearly the Timberwolves are in that mold. They want to win now. Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and now Rudy Gobert, the centerpieces. But a big part of that is D'Angelo Russell, and he was asked about that. And anybody who heard the press conference or was paying attention, that did come up on how he fits with Ant and with D'Lo.
Yeah, and I think Rudy Gobert, you know, one of the things that he brings on the offensive end of the floor is his ability to screen and roll and be a big lob threat at the basket. It's one of the things he does maybe better than anybody in the NBA. And so I think he's going to be able to enhance those guys' games in that aspect. You know, we'll see what Chris Finch, you know, as he gets to drawing up what they want to do offensively next year, how he's exactly going to deploy those skill sets. But I think initially, I think it enhances their pick and roll game. And especially that's something that D'Lo can thrive in, finding his space to operate, you know, whether it's in the mid range or from the outside. And, you know, Gobert can roll and score inside, no problem. So I think it's going to really enhance those, that aspect of their offense.
And this is all on what had or what the roster looks like for the Timberwolves at the moment. There still could be some moves. Is it a foregone conclusion that no matter what, D'Angelo Russell is here when the season starts in the fall?
I mean, you never say never to anything, right? But it certainly seems more likely than I think I would have pegged it 2 weeks ago, for instance. So, you know, you spend your draft capital to get Gobert in here. So, you know, in a theoretical trade, if you were going to be moving on from D'Angelo Russell, and you might have to give up a draft pick to make that happen, they don't really have a pick to do that with at the moment. So it would have to be an interesting kind of trade to make that happen if it was going to happen. But I think, you know, it seems to be that D'Lo will be the starting point guard next year. But, again, you never want to say never because things can change very quickly in the NBA.
Now, just on the money side, Gobert, Towns, D'Angelo Russell, that's a lot of money tied up in three guys. And at some point, the D'Angelo Russell contract would come off the books because Anthony Edwards and his second deal beyond his rookie deal looms.
That's right. So they have a 2-year window here. Yep. Where they're going to be able to stay under the luxury tax, I think, because Edwards and McDaniels will still be on their rookie deals for the next 2 years. It'll be interesting to see what happens with D'Lo and his salary slot. You know, one thing that, you know, you're able to do in the NBA is if you re-sign your own players or kind of make trades, you're able to operate as a team that goes above the salary cap but below the luxury tax. And that's where the Wolves are right now. They're kind of in that area above the cap but below the luxury tax. So if, you know, you let D'Lo walk, you suddenly become under the salary cap, and I'm not sure what their ability to sign players that would put them above the cap but below the tax would be. It's very convoluted and complicated. Yeah. It's probably too complicated to get into on a short radio segment. But we'll see kind of how they handle kind of that $30 million salary slot that D'Angelo Russell represents currently on the roster. You know, do they re-sign him? You know, do they try to trade him to you know, maybe get players on longer contracts? Who knows? So, you know, we'll see what they have in store, but they have some time to mull that over. And, you know, they have some time to see how D'Lo will fit with Rudy Gobert in this new configuration before maybe they make some longer term decisions on that front.
And a little bit more about D'Angelo Russell, because it seemed at the end of the series with Memphis, when he didn't play at crunch time in Game 6, that he's gone. He's out the door. They're going to move him. They're going to move on from D'Angelo Russell. That never happened. Tim Connelly comes aboard, makes this big deal, brings in Gobert, and now it seems like D'Angelo Russell and Rudy Gobert are a better fit together. Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, you've got some real star power and some talent there where, you know, ultimately they get into the top six in the NBA's Western Conference. They qualify for the playoffs. They win a first-round playoff game, and they move into that group with Golden State, Phoenix, Dallas, and Denver at the top of the conference. And, you know, who knows once you get into the playoffs. But ultimately, D'Angelo Russell might be in a good spot from a Timberwolves perspective because he's playing for a big contract beyond next year. That he would go into this season highly motivated to prove everyone that, hey, I'm worth the money.
Right, and the last time he was in a contract year was the year he made the All-Star game. So we've seen him get motivated before by, you know, an impending contract negotiation. And, you know, all it takes is in the NBA, and this happened to Russell last time, is one team just has to offer you a max contract or whatever, and you're a max player. Now, I don't know if he's going to make that kind of money based on what a max contract would be for him. But, you know, if he comes out and has a good year, which certainly possible, especially with the new dynamic on the team, you know, we saw him make some strides defensively last season. And I think with Gobert, I just assume that that's going to continue on the defensive end of the floor, that Gobert is going to kind of cover up a lot of issues that the Wolves had at times last year. You know, we'll see. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that if there's no clarity for the Wolves, at least in terms of D'Angelo Russell's status going into a contract year. I don't think you need to come to a decision this summer. You can kind of see how things play out during the course of the season.
Yeah, and certainly Glenn Taylor's new partners, Mark Loy and Alex Rodriguez, definitely pushed for Tim Connelly, comes in. I wonder, and wonder out loud, how much they push for a big splash. Let's go all in. Let's try and win now, because ultimately they'll take the reins of the team as Glenn Taylor exits stage right.
Yeah, and so you know, I think they're very fired up about it. You know, as they take over in the winter, I think, of 2023, you know, you're going to have a team that they hope is a top four contender in the West for the next at least couple of years, 3-4 years down the road here. So that's the vision. That's the idea. You know, I think it's listen, Timberwolves basketball has had a lot of not exciting times, to put it mildly. This is one of the most exciting times you can imagine. I think probably, you know, when the trade for Jimmy Butler happened, it was a big moment. You know, we'll see what happens here. There could be more stability here, but nothing's guaranteed to work out. But for a franchise that's only made one Western Conference Finals appearance, it's the arrow is pointing up. That's for sure.
Chris Hyten covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune. Busy day with Rudy Gobert meeting the media earlier, and we'll have more audio later on in the program. And, of course, some more on Late Night with Henry here on News Talk, E3O, WCCO. And with that all-in attitude, the one thing that has translated, and we saw the emergence of this team and the fact that they were ultimately were going to be a playoff team, the fans really responded. And a big part of that is getting butts in seats and eyeballs in front of televisions and ears in front of radio and building excitement. That's ultimately what pays the bills here. And, you know, by going all in, you know, I'm sure they're banking on it, this team being a tough ticket in downtown Minneapolis most nights.
Yes, 100%. You know, that's another thing. You look back through attendance, and the Timberwolves consistently towards the bottom of the NBA in attendance. I don't foresee that happening next season. you know, and that's the thing. I think you just have to give these fans something to buy into, because for decades, you know, these fans have been sold one thing or another, and you have to, with this team, you have to prove it. You have to prove that you're a winner, and you have to win over the fans that way. You can't just expect the fans to come blindly when they've put up with mediocre basketball for so long. So last year, I think, was a big step in that direction, where you could see something forming. You see the talent. You see Anthony Edwards. You see Carl Anthony Towns. A good coach and Chris Finch, and now you make kind of that move that you think is going to get you to the next step. So I think it is an important signal from the Wolves to the fan base that, look, we are trying to go places with this. We're not settling for, you know, a first round exit. We are trying to go deep into the Western Conference playoffs to maybe make a title run if everything breaks right. And you know, it's what fans deserve, especially those that really have stuck by this team through thick and a lot of thin.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. And before the top of the hour, I brought this up. You've got Golden State, the champs now in the West. You have Phoenix, and their playoff run really fizzled. You've got an emerging Dallas team and Doncic. And then, of course, you got Jokic in Denver. And if the Timberwolves can be in that mix and that conversation, that's pretty good. I mean, that's fun.
It is. We'll see what happens with Phoenix, you know, and DeAndre Ayton and how that situation plays out. But, you know, Western Conference is going to be tough no matter what. And you have the possibility, I think one thing that you're going to see maybe, you have the possibility of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving breaking up in Brooklyn here and maybe ending up on two different Western Conference teams. You know, if you look at all the rumors with the Lakers and Kyrie and, you know, potentially the Suns being a destination for Durant. So, you know, that's two teams that potentially get really elevated based on who they might be able to trade for this offseason. So, and I think the Wolves see that. And, you know, you see that that this landscape is not going to get any easier anytime soon. So you have to do something. You have a chance to strike. They made their move. You know, they've made their bed for the next 4 or 5 years, however long this might play out. They've made their move, and now we'll see where it takes them from here.
Yeah, and the cornerstones, now Cat, Gobert, Anthony Edwards, and you got D'Angelo Russell, at least the way it looks, for one more season. Hey, Chris, always good to visit with you. Appreciate your coverage in the Star Tribune and online at startribune.com.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Chris Hine on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. More on the Timberwolves coming up. As constructed at the moment, is this the best Wolves team ever? I know they haven't played a game, so it's tough, but does it feel like it could surpass the Kevin Garnett era and that one trip to the Western Conference Finals? They came so close. We'll get into that in a moment here on Sports the Max. Steve in for Mike here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Rudy Gobert in the fold. Met the media today. We'll have more Rudy Gobert audio coming up before the end of the program tonight here on Sports to the Max. And then Henry Lake on Lake Night. A lot of comments about Gobert and the Timberwolves. By the way, Twins get beat by the White Sox today in 10. One that got away. 9-8 the final on the south side. Twins take 2 out of 3. They leave the Windy City with the lead. They have a day off tomorrow. They open a 3-game series with the Rangers down in Texas on Friday night. Our coverage begins at 6:30. Chris Atterbury on the pregame. Corey Probus, Dan Gladden with all the play-by-play here on the home of the Twins. They lose 9-8 in 10. We'll talk more about that. About this Timberwolves team. Now you got Cat. Now you got Ant. You got Gobert. Likely D'Angelo Russell playing a role in all of this. Could this Timberwolves team surpass the great Timberwolves teams under Kevin Garnett that made all those playoff appearances but ultimately made only one trip to the Western Conference Finals in 04 where they got beat by the LA Lakers 4-2? That was KG, that was Sprewell and company. Sam Cassell, part of that team. And I'm going to just say, there's no way you can go there at this point. Because number one, Kevin Garnett's the greatest player in Timberwolves franchise history, until proven otherwise. And Karl Anthony Towns is on a good trajectory as a supermax player and done a lot of good things. But he's not at Kevin Garnett level. And I don't think Rudy Gobert is at Kevin Garnett level. And Anthony Edwards, we still don't know what his upside is. I think we have a pretty good idea what D'Angelo Russell is. And if he fits in or wants to be a part of this thing this upcoming season, they could do some really nice things. But until they reach that level where they win a playoff series or two or get to a conference finals or, dare I say, an NBA Finals, I don't think he can make any comparison. Chris, how do you think? On paper, could this team be as good as that Timberwolves team of 03-04?
I don't think it can be, and I don't think it will be. Because you mentioned Kevin Garnett, and I went through the starting five, and this is my own personal take, right? You got D'Lo, Ant, Jaden McDaniels, Cat, and Rudy Gobert. Let's go back to that 03-04 team that so close to winning the Western Conference. Sam Cassell, Wally Szczerbiak, Latrell Sprewell, Trenton Hassell, and KG. Now, again, this is just me doing this on the fly. I think Sam Cassell better than D'Lo. Agree or disagree?
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Okay, I feel like defensively...
But, and we've already talked about KG.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Ant, I think, better than Wally. Latrell Sprewell, better than McDaniels.
Yep.
Cat, Trenton Hassell, no comparison, no disrespect to Trenton Hassell. And then when you're talking about the five, KG over Rudy Gobert. So I think even individually, you had the big three that right now are bigger than the big two for the Timberwolves. Rudy Gobert is that third, I feel, but at the end of the day, this team hasn't played one single game. I know we're in our feelings. We love it. You know, rah-rah, sis-boom-bah, let's get out the pom-poms. We're drinking the Kool-Aid, everything like that. But at the end of the day, let's not set unrealistic expectations. It's nice to have expectations, but let's pump the brakes on best team ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They haven't played a game. They haven't played a season together. So, number one, I'll say what I said before the top of the hour. Top six or bust, and win a playoff series or bust. If they don't finish in the top six and they squeak into the... Now, you don't know how injuries are going to play, and you don't know what's going to happen on that front. But assuming the group stays relatively healthy, should be at top six in the NBA's Western Conference, and you got to get a playoff series win. Beyond that, you get into that Final Four in the conference, I think that would be a good start for this group. All right, we got to run 7:30. We're going to come back, talk a little golf. Of course, there's a PGA Tour versus LIV, the Saudi finance tour that's picking off some of the veteran players. Oh, by the way, the Open Championship is coming up at St. Andrews, the 150th British Open. Tiger will play. Ron Cyrak, longtime golf journalist, will join us on the other side of the weather here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Lovely summer evening here in the Twin Cities, partly cloudy, 80 degrees. Our dew point 65, so there is a little humidity, variable winds at 5 miles an hour. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a low near 69. Tomorrow, cloudy 84, Friday, sunny 85. 85 again on Saturday. Chance of thunderstorms on Sunday and 86. And I'm going to play golf with my daughter at Figures. There's a chance of thunderstorms on Sunday. We have a 1 o'clock tee time Sunday at the local Muni. And looking forward to it here in the Twin Cities. Partly cloudy, 80 degrees. Speaking of golf, Ron Cyrak coming up here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Sports to the max. Here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. Twins fall to the White Sox 9-8 in 10 innings. White Sox salvage the final game of the three-game series. Twins still in first, lead Cleveland and Chicago in the American League Central. They're on their way to Texas. They have a day off Thursday before they open series on Friday night. Pre-game 6:30. Sonny Gray on the mound. He's been very good. He will take on the Rangers. Chris Atterbury gets us started Friday night. Then Corey Provis, Dan Gladden with all the play-by-play. More on the Twins game today. A couple of highlights. Rocco Baldelli and his bullpen use before 9 o'clock as well. Let's talk golf. And Ron Cyrak joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And Ron is a contributor on Golf Channel, an author, and a PGA Lifetime Achievement and Journalism Award winner, an LPGA Media Excellence Award winner. Ron, always good to visit with you. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, good to visit with you. A week from tomorrow, the Open at St. Andrews, the 150th, and you've had a chance to cross the pond and cover Opens at St. Andrews.
Yeah, I've done the men 4 times there and the women twice there. It's truly a special, special place. You feel the history when you're there, and it's a golf course where, and it's going to be interesting to see, when the wind's not blowing, there are probably 6 drivable par 4s in that golf course now. But it's the kind of golf course where, and I saw Rory McIlroy do this, you could shoot 63 one day, and then the wind blows the next day, and you shoot 81. So it's always fun to watch how nature plays a role in that event.
And there has been a fair amount of hand-wringing about the weather and hoping that there is weather, whether it's wind or rain or cold or a combo of those, to protect the golf course, because we know over the years the clubs have changed and the golf ball has changed.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is pretty cool about the R&A, the Royal and Ancient Golf Club, is if somebody goes 17, 18 under because it was benign weather, they don't go crazy over that. They just say, well, that's it. You know, if the wind blows next year, even par will win the tournament. You know, the greens, and it's one of the things I like about British Open golf in general, is the greens don't putt at crazy speeds like they do for U.S. Open. Because of the way the wind blows there, you know, and I've been at British Opens where play has been stopped because the wind was blowing so hard the balls wouldn't stand still on the greens. But, you know, you get a U.S. Open, the greens might putt 13, 13 and a half on a stimp, and they're going to putt more like 10 at a British Open. And it makes it fun because more putts can go in the hole.
Yeah, and it's a completely different kind of golf that generally we see here in the States. There are some courses that maybe mimic open golf that people will see on television every now and then, but it is unique the way it is played in an open championship.
Yeah, you know, when Ernie Els first came over and started playing in the States, and, you know, he had cut his teeth on the European tour, he said, you know, in the States, you need one shot, the high shot with spin. Well, the high shot with spin doesn't do you any good at all in Britain, because if the wind's blowing, you don't want to hit it high. And, you know, so the approach shots is played more of a ground game. You know, the shots, you're going to see a lot of bump and runs. You see people putting from maybe 20, 30 yards off the greens there. It's a very, very different style of golf. And you can't just step on the tee and play bomb and gouge golf. You can't hit the ball 340, hope you find it, and hit it again. You got, because of the pot bunkers, you got to know where all the bunkers are. You got to know your layup yardages. And I think, by and large, British Open courses have held up well against modern technology because of the weather and because of the links land there, because it takes the driver out of the long hitter's hands on a lot of holes.
So St. Andrews front and center next week. Always look forward to it. And what's great, most can get up and catch a little golf before they head off to work on television. So it is a fun event. Tiger Woods will play. That's certainly a headline. And there's been a lot of talk since Tiger's accident, and he ultimately came back and found a way to make the cut at the Masters. Or played the PGA, didn't play very well, skipped the U.S. Open, and now he's going to tee it up at the Open Championship next week. And the thought is that as Tiger gets older, that this is probably his best chance to add to his major total.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons. It's not that difficult of a golf course to walk, not a lot of elevation changes there. For reasons that I said before, the driver's not all that important of a golf club. He can hit that stinger 2-iron off the tee and play his way around the course that way. And he knows the golf course very, very well also. He's played it a bunch of times, and he's won there twice. So he's got good feelings to tie into there. It is a golf course that will get his adrenaline going. But it's also going to be the kind of golf course that's going to be accessible to where his game is right now. You know, I think if he played Brookline for the U.S. Open and he was hitting the ball into some of that fescue there, he'd have had trouble. But I think he can keep the ball in play at St. Andrews. And, you know, I'm not going to say that he's going to be on the leaderboard on Sunday, but I expect him to get to the weekend.
Yeah, and I should bring up the U.S. Open that was in your backyard, so to speak, at the Country Club in Brookline, and the course stood up well. There were a lot of people saying, get the Country Club on a regular rotation. I'm not sure the members want that, but it held up very well. It was a great U.S. Open.
It was a terrific U.S. Open, and I think the members who have resisted you know, having it come back, I did the first U.S. Open I did, 1988, was there, Curtis Strange, Nick Faldo playoff. And the members didn't want it to come back, mostly because in the 99 Ryder Cup there, they let too many people, spectators, on the golf course. They had 40,000 people there. It's an old footprint, that golf course. Not a lot of land. It was too jammed in. So they held the attendance down this time. And I think that pleased the members. I think that was 25,000 they capped it at. So you could work your way around, and the members were thrilled at how well received the golf course was by not only the players but the viewing public.
Yeah, and it's probably a course I'll never be invited to play, but the good news is if I want to shell out the money, I could get on at St. Andrews, so there's that.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's one of the cool things about the great golf courses in Britain is that you can get on to almost all of them. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do like that. And now Pebble Beach as well, if you're willing to shell out the money, you can play Pebble Beach. Some of the private clubs are a little bit more limited. But just a final thought on the country club in Brookline. Is there a thought, because I know the USGA is handing out championships well down the road, are they in the mix for a future U.S. Open?
I don't think they have a date penciled in yet, but but they are going to be. I would imagine that they will be in there. Look, the USGA is setting up a rota, much like the British Open has. You know, the rota's got about a half dozen golf courses that they circulate through. And we're seeing right now the USGA is in love with Pebble Beach on the West Coast. They're in love with Oakmont. They like Shinnecock. There are places that they're going to go to regularly, and I don't think that that Brookline will be a place that they're going to go to every 6 or 7 years, but I think that we're not going to have to wait a couple of decades to get back there.
Next week will be the second major where LIV meets the PGA Tour and other stars from the world of golf, and this isn't going away anytime soon. There were a lot of raised eyebrows. One of the defectors from the PGA Tour, Taylor Gooch, said some things about LIV golf so far that raised some eyebrows, Ron.
Yeah, he said that I guess he was on the winning team in the team event and the second event in Portland. And he said, I've never been to a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup, but I can't imagine it's any better than this. I couldn't let him get away with that. I sort of tweeted out, well, I've been to 11 Ryder Cups, you know. And I said, and you need a better imagination because it's nothing like this. So,
well,
I'm fascinated at how personally players are taking it now. We saw Billy Horschel this week in the prelude to the Scottish Open this week. Just call the players who've gone to LIV Golf hypocrites. And what he wants them to say, and I sort of agree with him on this, is just say it's about the money. That's why you're doing it. You're doing it for the guaranteed money. And
and Graham McDowell, basically alluded to the fact that, hey, the PGA Tour is hard. You know, I'm at a point in my career where I've paid my dues. I've won golf tournaments. He's got a major on his resume. And week in and week out on the PGA Tour, it's hard to win the Quad Cities Open. It's hard to win the 3M Open at the TPC of the Twin Cities coming up later this month. It is hard. It is very difficult because the fields are so deep.
Yeah, you know, and you go over and you play a LIV event, and in addition to whatever appearance money you might be getting, last place is $120,000. So, you know, I mean, you could, I think I wrote Andy Ogletree, who finished last in the first event, shot rounds of 81, 77, 75. The guy could play all 8 LIV events this year, never break 75, and make $960,000. And that just, you know, to me, I don't see how that grows the game of golf. You know, I mean, it doesn't grow anything except the checkbooks of the guys who are playing in it.
Yeah, and if everyone just came out and said, yeah, it is about the money. If they just said, hey, I'm here for the money and the guarantees, and I'm good with it. Now they will appear, and it will be a sidebar. But I think we found at the U.S. Open that there were some stories about how the LIV guys fared compared to the PGA Tour guys, etc. But when the tournament starts, it is about the oldest championship in golf next Thursday.
Yeah, you know, this week at the Scottish Open, they first tried to ban the LIV players from the Scottish Open, and then a court issued a temporary injunction, so they're there. But what they've done at LIV is the tournament director essentially paired all the LIV players together, you know, which was sort of a little backhanded slap at them. We're going to see some of that, but. Well, when you get right down to it, it's the oldest golf tournament in the world, played on the oldest golf course in the world. You know, it doesn't get any better than the Open Championship at St. Andrews, and that's what everybody's going to be talking about next week.
You've covered the men and women at St. Andrews. Have you had a chance to play there?
I have. I played it three times. And
oh, wow.
In 2013, the men were playing at Muirfield, and then there's a week in between. And then the women were playing at St. Andrews. So I went over and I told my boss, I'll cover the men at Muirfield. I'll cover the women at St. Andrews. I'm going to take that week in between as vacation. So I just checked in the Scores Hotel for 15 days and I played the Old Course. I mentioned that I was coming over, and a member of the St. Andrews Golf Club on Twitter says, do you want to play? And I said, you know, you get a tee time and I'm picking up dinner, you know, for us.
Sure.
So that was one of the rounds I got. I loved it. I love Lynx Golf. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania on a public golf course, didn't have watered fairways. And I'm started playing golf in the late 50s, early 60s. And I learned golf in a very Lynx-y sort of way. You know, I learned to hit the ball low. I learned to play my short game on the ground, bumping runs with eight irons. So it was fun for me to go there and play that kind of golf.
Oh, yeah, look forward to it. The British Open starts next Thursday at St. Andrews. Ron, always good to visit with you, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Talk to you down the road, my friend.
All right, there he is, Ron Cyrak, contributor to Golf Channel, longtime golf journalist, award-winning, has written a lot of wonderful books, and here we go, the Open next week. Love it. You get up early, and what's great is on Saturday and Sunday, you can watch the final round of completion and still get some chores done on a Sunday afternoon. 11 minutes now in front of 8 o'clock. It is Sports to the Max. Steve in for Mike here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.